From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. It's good to have my guest, director Seth Gordon, return. He was last here for his momentous documentary, King of Kong, which took a look at a world that was both kind of insular and expansive, the world of video game champions. His two feature films, I should say his two comedy films, because King of Kong was a doc, but a feature as well. His two studio films have been comedies. His first film was Four Christmases. His newest is Horrible Bosses. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me back.
It's interesting that you end up doing comedies, because with the docs you've been associated with, I mean, I wouldn't exactly... I mean, they have that kind of weird thing about tension in enclosed spaces or enclosed worlds, which both of your features have. Mm-hmm. But the move to comedy is kind of interesting for me.
Yeah, it's something that I didn't think of Kong as particularly comedic when I first, you know, was part of that and when we first made that film. But it really struck a comedic nerve with a lot of people. I feel like, for me, the stakes are very high. The emotions are very raw, especially for Weeby. And so...
Would you consider Freakonomics to be
not
comedic?
Not at all.
That's why I'm... So,
it's like, why am I doing comedies is a really reasonable question. Although I have, a bit of a background in that, and I certainly... love comedy.
Well, your shorts veer more towards comedy than the features do.
Yeah, I think they do. It always impresses me that you've actually seen some of those things.
I go to a lot of film festivals, my friend, but I guess I just find this fascinating because, again, we look at what you've done in the doc world. Again, they've been about these in fairly, like I said, insular worlds where there are tensions. And you look at the two features, comedy aside, they're also about fairly insulated worlds, you know, almost these tribal situations. Mm-hmm. And I would say that appends to your documentaries as well.
I think I really appreciate finding that parallel. I think I'm attracted to situations where people want what they can't have. And that's – or where the thing that they want isn't up to them whether or not they're going to get it. And that's especially true in Kong, but it's also true in Bosses too. And I think sort of that's inherent to comedy premises in general is that specific struggle and whatever the world it may be set in, that I think connects those ideas.
The handful of folks who haven't seen Horrible Bosses yet, tell them what the movie's about in case the title – so we should say it's not an ironic title.
There you go. Sure. It's about three guys who are each stuck in their jobs with a boss that is certainly terrible or horrible, and they really want to get out of their circumstance. But because of the state of the economy and the fact that jobs are really hard to come by nowadays, they each feel like the only way out of their circumstance, and they come to this conclusion on one drunken night, is to try to off their bosses, kill their bosses. And that doesn't go as planned at all because our guys, while very likable, are not exactly the brightest criminal minds. And so it all goes sideways, and it really is a film about enjoying the journey of them failing at this relatively unreasonable task.
It's The Treatment. I'm talking about unreasonable tasks with my guest director, Seth Gordon. His new film, his new comedy film as director is Horrible Bosses. Well, I guess one of the things I find myself wondering, given the cast in both these movies you've done for studios, I'm guessing you chose to work with these people because it sort of plays to your strength in letting people improvise a little bit and just basically having the thread of the story already there for you. I'm guessing in both cases, there was some small amount of improvisation.
Yeah, I mean, in the case of documentary, obviously you cannot control what's going to happen at all, and probably the best documentarians can be argued let things unfold without influence, even though you can argue whether that's hypothetically even possible. But you certainly are not in total control in a documentary. You're shaping with a very specific point of view what the story might be, but you aren't, getting. You're not making your entire focus. Known is one aspect of it, and you're also not you're discovering it as you go, and you have to have the kind of stomach that's comfortable with that, and that really helps in when you're working with actors who are so gifted that they're constantly creating great material.
You see your stars here are Jason Bateman,
and
Charlie Day
and Jason Sudeikis.
And Charlie Day and Sudeikis had just worked together in the movie last year, the movie they'd done together,
Going the Distance. Yeah, and it should also be pointed out that they worked together on Charlie's show, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which is a terrific...
And a show that's literally all about improvisation.
I visited set once, and they're constantly... It's basically a relentless pursuit of funny, and they realize that in any given moment, I think we did on Bosses 2, you can always elevate the material. You have the script is best intentions, your best idea in advance of what you might do, but if you always want to find a better lines, better ways of saying things, understand the architecture of a given joke and you can always do it better, and it ends up being a process of being willing to let go of a particular scene. Okay, we've got it good enough for now, we can move on. And that's having a stomach for that I think I learned first in documentary really applies to working with actors that are always creating.
Did you find that these movies just came to you? Were you actively seeking movies that had probably more flexibility than studio movies generally do?
I think I didn't know enough to have a plan. I just was reading scripts as they arrived, and I was responding to the material. And in the case of Four Christmases, it was really Vince who'd seen Kong and who created that opportunity for me.
Oh.
And Reese and Vince were already involved in that movie, and it was just, I couldn't say no to the opportunity to possibly work with two of the greatest actors of their generation. And then when it came to Bosses, there were no actors attached when I read the script, but there was something so powerful to me about the frustration that people have had, and I've had, other people have had with their bosses and being stuck in a circumstance at work. There's something really, basic that I responded to in that I just felt people would want to see. And so I wanted to be a part of that film. And then we cast it the way we did, and it became a lot of fun.
Fascinatingly enough, between the docs you've done have been about people trying to sort of build a world for themselves, and the comedies you've done have been about people trapped in worlds.
You're right, but I had no one had ever brought that up before.
Really? Because it seems kind of evident to me, and I just wondered if you were in fact trying to test yourself by dealing with these films, because as you were saying when we got started, circumscribed circumstances make for great comedy.
Yeah, being trapped and wanting to get out is a wonderful comedy premise, and I guess I haven't tried to draw the parallels between my own personal choices of that material and the material itself, but I think there probably is one there. I mean, the sad truth is that as great as documentaries are, and as many of my friends love to watch them, and given how much I love to watch them, you'd think there'd be a sort of business model or a way to support oneself creatively by doing those films. But by and large, there just isn't. There's just, if you make a movie like Kong, you'll never really be able to count on it being able to make your money back. It's just, there isn't a business model, and that's difficult. And like, just the practical realities of, now I'm married, I've got a kid, he's 18 months. Like, you gotta take a job where you can actually pay for life, and that's definitely a factor, but it's not the only factor.
It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. My guest is director Seth Gordon. His new film as director is the comedy Horrible Bosses. But you talked about being on Horrible Bosses from the ground floor. What were you looking for? Because, again, given that obviously a lot of what attracts you to filmmaking in general is finding what the cliche, happy accidents, how do you manufacture something like that in the casting process?
I think I knew that from doing some work in television – after Four Christmases, before Horrible Bosses, that there was an incredible world of actors that rarely get the opportunity to make a transition into feature films. And so my approach with New Line was to say, what if our three guys were guys like that?
Interestingly enough, three guys who basically are best known for television.
Yeah, and that was the conceit. It was, can we assemble a great trio out of that group? Now, at that time, I hadn't imagined, frankly, that Bateman, who I think, you know, he's really a movie star already in his own right, but he was attracted to this material. And so when he took interest, it was like, absolutely. Why would we ever not, you know, he's the, I think, one of the best straight men of the generation, of this generation. And I think that's exactly what we needed to go up against Spacey's character, because that.
And Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
Who's his horrible boss.
Yeah. That relationship is, I think, the most relatable to the average worker, the average American, in the sense that Spacey is a micromanager who really tells you everything you do is wrong. You can always do it better. Who dangles the carrot that is potentially your promotion or your raise or whatever, you know, carrot might suit the circumstance and suit whatever agenda he has on the side. That kind of guy, I think we've all experienced in some way, whether it was a coach or a teacher or a boss at some point. And for that reason, Bateman, who I think is incredible at being the audience's surrogate on screen, was to me the dream person to have in that role. So I was incredibly excited when he said yes. And obviously Charlie and Jason Sudeikis, not only is their chemistry amazing with each other, but they both have a writerly background. I think that's a really big deal, because these guys, when they're improvising in quotes in a scene, they're not inventing something that doesn't pertain. You know, they're creating within the boundaries of the intentions of the story and the characters that they've already started to create. And that's a dynamic and intuitive process that I don't think can be taught. You either have the potential to learn that and you learn that through experience as they have, or you just can't work in that mode. You work in a totally different mode, perhaps, where you stick to the page exactly as written, like it's the Bible or Shakespeare, and that has value too. It's just a different methodology.
It's also an interesting thing too, and it's obviously one of the things you must throw about in terms of casting, just the size issue between the two of them. And not only that, but the size issue in terms of the presence of Sudeikis' voice versus the presence of Day's voice.
Yeah, I mean, they are, you know, the bass and the, you know, the tenor, respectively, and Bateman's a healthy baritone right in the middle, and their energy is sort of perfectly synergistic, those two. And what was amazing about Bateman, who understood the second he read a scene with them, which is in our first table read, which is before we had a full cast assembled, he knew instantly how to balance his own performance to match the two of them. And I think that that's, again, that's not something you can teach. I mean, he's been performing for 30 years, and it's a result of all that experience that he knew how to calibrate what he did in respect to them. And he took me aside after that first read, and he said, I'm not capable of matching that energy. That's not what I do. So just know that as we walk into this. And I think he was actually very responsibly giving me the opportunity to say, okay, thank you, we can go our separate ways. But what he maybe hadn't seen in that moment was his ability to balance that was so amazing that it led to another level. It elevated everything. It's extraordinary. And like multiple viewings of the movie reveal some of those layers.
Well, we're going to take a break, and you can go see the movie again during the break. My guest is Seth Gordon, the director of the new film Horrible Bosses. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. There's more to come.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. My guest is Seth Gordon, a documentarian turned comedy director whose new film is Horrible Bosses. But we talk about documentaries and comedies, and you worked on three TV shows that bring the documentary form into people's living rooms.
Yeah.
The Office,
yeah.
Parks and Recreation, and Modern Family. And I think we're at a really interesting point in this culture where the documentary form has so suffuse the way people think that it can play in entertainment terms and still have those kind of resources we look to in comedy.
In working on the last episode of The Office that I did, one of the anecdotes I heard repeated there was that 80% of the audience that watches The Office isn't aware that it's a documentary. Meaning, it's the fact of that form doesn't impact the way they take in the story. It just is. It's just another way. Just like the conceit of editing in general is something we all accept as story, even though every moment it has a point of view. Every cut has a point of view in any sort of edited piece of material. So too is the sort of documentary form just normal somehow.
And I'm fascinated by that because I think maybe people don't really recognize consciously, but documentaries are now everywhere. Between documentaries and reality TV, what these shows, Modern Family, Parks and Rec, and The Office, have really almost erased the line between what is real and what is fiction.
Yeah, it's actually enabled us to think of the remake of The King of Kong in different ways. You know, with different eyes.
I mean, you were talking about that before. That is going to happen.
Well, it looks like it. You know, a script recently came in that's 135 pages. We're cutting it down. But where we said, and this is informed by having done a few of those episodes, I said, what if we just adopted this format that these shows use in their scripts, creating that, whatever the right term is, docu-style, mockumentary-style, and adopt that in the way we create the script for the feature of King of Kong. And it opened up huge creative opportunities because there's so many things in the language of that narrative filmmaking style that don't fit in to traditional narrative filmmaking style. And there's a lot of sort of the way you craft the B-roll in every moment that supports what someone's saying or doesn't, you know, or punches against it, or whether something's observed like it's a spy shot, something that's not meant to be seen but is seen, is all that stuff really enables storytelling opportunities. And we found that we needed that actually to cover the amount of ground we would need to in a remake.
I should ask you to remind people what King of Kong was about.
King of Kong is about two grown men who think they're the best in the world at Donkey Kong. And these guys couldn't be more different. One is a middle school science teacher who's been in his life constantly sort of he always got the silver but never the gold. And the person whose record he's going up against is a hot sauce manufacturer. And is sort of the best video game player ever, who still sort of lives in the 80s. In his mind, sort of a natural winner, and his parents agree. And you know, this guy challenging it, the middle school science teacher, is in his mind anyway a natural born loser, even though he's always just the runner-up, you know. But to him, silver is never enough.
Nor for me. It's The Treatment. My guest is Seth Gordon. His new film as director is Horrible Bosses. But we're talking a little about King of Kong, only because the way that you've worked is in terms of documentaries, and there's also this other parallel as well, and in the comedies you've done, is that the docs have been about people who can't stop talking. And can't really, it's almost a sad compulsion in all these films, New York Doll or Freakonomics or King of Kong. It's incredible to have that. And to some extent, that's been a part of the comedies you've done as well. I mean, if you look at The Office or Parks and Rec or Modern Family or your feature films, there's this thread of all these people who just can't shut up.
I've never heard that particular way of characterizing that either, but you're really right. You know, whether it's Arthur or Billy and his rehearsed aphorisms, some of which he stumbles on when he's in a moment of where he's actually nervous, or, you know, some of the characters we capture in these shows, there's definitely a compulsion or a problem or an obsession that is revealed, you know?
Because I just feel like on those shows as well, I mean, it's the danger point. I mean, you think about anybody in Modern Family or especially in The Office, I mean, it's just they can't help it. Whenever, and it's that thing, especially in those quiet moments where they really are, in effect, speaking directly to the camera, to the audience, that's when all the stuff really spills out of them. And I wonder how it's like to sort of orchestrate that in a faux manner as compared to when you're just sitting with the camera waiting for these real-life people in the docks to talk.
Right. I'd say what's wonderful about The Office in particular is how expert all those actors are at those characters.
So they've been in it for a long time. And there's, we should say, it's a real office environment. They're working computers in the
set. It's true. Yeah. And you can go on email. People really are playing, you know, solitaire. There's versions of everything. There is a fully functioning office, which is a wonderful detail of what Greg Daniels created there, made it a real place. And the mundane sort of, the treadmill of that is evident everywhere. And I love that they did that. And it allows everyone to sort of be in character, stay in character. And from that character, you can capture those points of view that are that the sort of obsessive confessional that you're talking about, where you get a sense of them wanting to express something that relates to the moment just so that they have existed here.
But I'm wondering what's more gratifying for you, really, that working with people who can turn it on in the way that actors can, or being in these situations where you're really trying to find both the people and the film you're making when you're doing a real-life documentary.
For me, I'd greatly prefer the documentary form, the true documentary form, and I feel like the real stories in real lives are, for me, the most compelling. And it's really just a matter of resources and time that those become impractical, but I definitely don't intend to ever stop being a part of documentary or supporting documentary, because, you know, now it's been a turn towards helping younger filmmakers do documentaries.
Are they coming to you? Younger filmmakers coming to you now?
Yeah, and younger filmmakers is almost a misnomer. They're just people I've worked with in the past I know are wonderful and wonderfully talented, and just getting resources to them so they can make their movies. One of them is called Make Believe About Young Magicians. Another one is
called... I saw that one. It was on Showtime, right?
Yeah.
The competition.
That's
really wonderful.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
Oh, good. Well, that's the same team, essentially, that made Kong. Clay Tweel, who is the assistant editor on Kong, I wanted, you know, to support very much, and he's the director, and a friend of mine, Stephen Klein, is the producer. And then another one called Undefeated, which will be showing at Toronto, is about... it's about a high school football team in North Memphis.
But they played at South by Southwest.
It sure did.
Yeah, I saw that there.
And it's amazing how you catch everything. That I'm very proud of that film and the two filmmakers that made that, Dan and TJ. And that's going to be coming out, I think, around Super Bowl time, 2012.
The proud father of both an 18-month-old and filmmakers is my guest. Seth Gordon, his new film as director, is Horrible Bosses. I caught it was on Showtime Extreme or something, of all places, make believe. And tell the it's a competition of young magicians from around the world.
Yeah, the original concept was Stephen Klein's, the producer's. He was a magician when he was a kid. And the interesting circumstance he would see again and again in young magicians is that they are nervous teenagers who often have a problem expressing themselves, except for when they're performing in magic. And you see this transformation when they step on stage, and it's presenting, and they become this character. And it's just wonderful to see how these kids discover themselves through performance and through creating that persona.
But there's an interesting sort of juxtaposition, because there are the kids who are... And they're mostly guys who are really kind of shy. But then there's like a young girl who could really be right.
Yeah.
I mean, she basically could be Reese Witherspoon.
Right. Oh, Tracy Flick. I mean, we would think about her in those terms because she's from Malibu. And she's very pretty, and she's very confident and a perfectionist. And for her, magic fits into this sort of spectrum of a pre-planned life or something, like the cognitive wheel of control, as her mother refers to it. And I you know, she is also a teenager, so she's going to UCLA now. I'm sure things are changing for her in her life, as it does for folks in college. But at that moment when we were with her, that was what magic was. And we were really interested in seeing what these kids who are pursuing this discipline, what happens to them when they enter a situation like an international magic competition where you cannot control the outcome? What happens to the hyper-control, hyper-focused, hyper-rehearsed individual when they're in a circumstance that is out of their hands? And that's, to me, that was a great concept. And that's why we chased that documentary.
What I find fascinating, too, is at a certain point, you have to wonder, because you're talking about control here and this need for control. And another thing that your doc subjects have in common is this thirst for control that's been slipping out of their fingers until the point we meet them almost.
Yeah.
And if that's something that, having made studio films and where there's a clock, but there's a lot of resources and you kind of know where the movie is going to end up, you must really love that feeling of having to find this thing and not having control. I mean, because most of the doc filmmakers that I talk to are basically like surfers. You want to go out there in the water and feel what the water is going to be like that day.
Yeah. And I think there's an aspect to that in narrative feature filmmaking, too.
Do you?
I do. And here's why. That during production, you are in the middle of, you know, one term I've heard is catching butterflies. Every day is an opportunity to work with your actors to discover the nuances of every given scene. And then in post, you have the opportunity to rhetorically reshape that to tell a story that was somewhere in the script on the page, but ultimately it had a very different tone than what you're going to discover through post. And I feel like you are working on a different sort of canvas when you're doing that in a narrative feature filmmaking, you know, mode, but you're ultimately using the same skill set, which is, here's the bag of tapes that we were able to gather, and then that's totally separate from the story that we're going to try to tell from those tapes. And that's I feel like been a real through line in all of these projects, where we sit down in the darkest hours in the editing room, we say, oh man, so what is the best way through this material? And it always takes time. It's never obvious. And you know, in each experience, the, you know, what was common to all of it, I feel like, is having the fortitude to believe that you will discover it.
Well, what a great place to end it, because we're out of time. Seth Summit, thanks so much for coming back.
Cool. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. My guest, who's manfully had to restrain himself from pounding the table, is director Seth Gordon. His new film as director is Horrible Bosses. Our recording engineer, editor, and mixer is J.C. Swadek. I'm Elvis Mitchell. I have no control either. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.